The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we begin a Thursday live from Red Eye Radio election headquarters. Gary, which, by the way, is the exact same studio that we're always in.
Still right next to the warehouse.
I love it when they put up graphics, right, on TV, on CNN, Fox News, whatever. We're in election headquarters.
We're in election
That's
central.
That's the same studio you were in this morning, dude. You put up a sign. The banner doesn't make it so.
And we're going to give you some critical analysis here. If the elections were held today.
Yeah, but they're not going to be. They're not going to be.
Then never mind.
Well, if the elections were held in 2074, we're pretty sure that an unknown candidate would win. We're going to call it. Red Eye Radio is ready to call it. It's just insane. If it were held today, yeah, wait for it. Let's wait for it. And I were having that discussion during the pre-show meeting that I don't really put anything in any square. This is the reason we couldn't make predictions before, but in the Trump presidency, because stuff happens every day, you're not going to be able to make a prediction. And it's just, I think even some of the pollsters that have been fairly close over the last several election cycles might find it more difficult for those polls, or might find it that those polls are not as accurate this go around. But, you know, we'll see, because some people are saying, here comes the blue wave. Democrats didn't have to win. I think that was the one from NBC. Democrats didn't have to win to make their mark on Tuesday. Well, yeah, they kind of did. That's the whole point. So we'll see where it goes in November, but I guess too many were pointing in one direction.
Yeah, I'm looking here that just it was, you know, as I was scanning the Wall Street Journal editorial page, The blue wave may be receding, Karl Rove. Huh? The editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, the red wave illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think there's more blue talk. I don't think anyone has. Maybe there's somebody out there that's talking about a red wave coming. Maybe the president is. I don't know. At one of his rallies.
Yeah, yeah.
But then that's what you do if you're a politician to begin with.
Right. Right.
But I don't know any serious analysis that's looking at
a red wave.
A red wave at this point. It was interesting because you and I were talking about how, you know, these predictions are made and so many of them are wrong. And you came out and you said, look, I look at November and say the best I can do is 50-50.
I mean, it really is. I hate to laughing. Be on the fence about it and noncommittal, but I think it becomes.
No, that's.
I don't think it's helpful.
No.
And I don't think that there's any way to make that solid prediction.
But I don't think it's noncommittal. I think when you look at 2016, look, if you look at the Obama years, people didn't like what was going on. That's why you had so many changes in the state legislatures around the country.
Right.
It's why the Republicans came back. And you can look at that as a political analyst and say, OK, I can see this massive direction of what it went into. But remember. Trump won because of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
We get this all the time where people say the polls are never right. They weren't right for Trump. Actually, the polls were right, numbers wise.
Right.
Yes. A lot of the polls were right. They didn't get the Electoral College. They didn't figure out the 300,000-400,000 people that changed direction in a few states, which changed it. But the actual numbers, there were three or four polls that were just, you know, dead on.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked the same thing about, I think it was 2012. And
right.
Also when we, and I think also 2008, when we looked at a lot of the polls, but especially 2012 and 2016, there were polls that were right on.
Mm-hmm.
And So to say 50-50 to me is not being noncommittal.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking and saying, wait, in 2016, you know, we have a voting-wise, mm-hmm. at least in a presidential race, just about a 50-50 country.
Right.
And so, as we have seen, when you have a 50-50 country, this is just normal politics in the history of politics. Whoever has the executive branch or who is in power, especially when you have, you know, the entire legislative and executive branch in a particular party, odds are you're going to see massive changes.
Yes.
Coming.
Yeah. Right.
Now,
right. Right.
The difference is the uniqueness of a Donald Trump never being a politician, running for political office and winning.
Right.
And so you have to take that into consideration. And you also have to take into consideration that the narrative really hasn't changed. You have a lot. You have a ton of still motivated Trump supporters, moderate conservatives, and even, and it's funny because you and I used the term during our pre-show meeting. We had a caller say it a couple of weeks ago, say a blue dog Democrat, and
yeah,
you,
right.
You had the great line saying, well, they're not really blue dog Democrats.
They're people that can't admit to their families that they're actually conservative.
Yes, exactly. Because there really are no blue dog Democrats.
Well, I mean, there aren't. I mean, you might find a handful of them maybe in the South, and I don't know that I would even put Joe Manchin that far right. I mean, he is a moderate. You know, I'd have to go back to the issues on a Joe Manchin, but you're right. They really don't rank and file. They really don't exist. I think even those in power, just for whatever reason, don't cross over to the dark side. But it's playing that political part. It's playing that political role in the makeup of a state like Joe Manchin's, or in PA 18. You have a Democrat who was pro-gun, who after the Parkland shooting was running an ad saying gun control is not the answer.
Right. You have in California, for example, we'll have this coming up here in a little bit, in 10 different races where the Democrats are running away from eliminating ICE.
Right.
They realize it's not a good way to go. So I believe in this campaign, it depends, because remember, the campaigns are just starting up now.
Right.
The campaigns for the general election are just starting up. And mm-hmm. you are going to have, I believe, I sense this just with that story and just what I see out there, I sense that you're going to have a ton of Democrats moving back to the middle again. We're getting back to the Democrats of the mid-90s. We're getting back to the Democrats prior to 2006, where Democrats didn't tell you what they really believed.
Right.
This is why you always heard, oh, they're moving drastically to the center. They're moving drastically to the center. They're moving drastically to the center. Well, that's what they're starting to do again. They realize that if they tell the American people what they really want to do, that the American people don't like it. So since they know and they believe that we have a nation that doesn't really pay attention, they understand, they see the same things that we do. They see the fact that the majority of Americans don't understand all the freedoms in the First Amendment. They understand that the majority of Americans have no idea about the separation of power. They believe that Americans are ignorant, and they're going to play upon that. You know, so you have to look at that coming up into the election as they decide to move back to the center again. How will that all wash out? I don't know. I can't tell you how that will all, wash out in the end. The other thing is in this midterm, you have Republicans that believe that they need Donald Trump in order to take their districts. They have to bring Donald Trump in. There are also Republicans who want to bring Donald Trump in, but still keep him at arm's length. They want to have support for him, but keep him at arm's length, because that's something that you and I have talked about before. Likeability and bluntness.
Yeah,
that
right.
That you can be a candidate and you can be loud, and you can have extremely animated rhetoric, in a campaign, and you might be able to have it for the first 6 months or even a year, but after that point, there are people who get sick of it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't care about it. It doesn't bother me at all. I care less about the rhetoric. What I care about is at the end of the day, what are you going to do? Same thing with you. You and I have said this. We're not going to go after the election. We said, we're not going to go through every Donald Trump tweet like everybody else is going to do. We're going to look and say, all right, what does he want to do legislative-wise, whether we agree with it or not? And there are a majority of things we agree with. There are things, a minority of things that we vehemently disagree with the president on. But it's based on issues. I could care less. Personality doesn't matter to me. Political rhetoric doesn't matter to me. It's actually what you end up doing. And for the most part, I like what the president is doing, and I don't see anybody on the Republican side. I don't see anybody on the Democrat side that could come close to doing what I want a president to do when it comes to the actual issues, except President Trump. And so I can still have disagreements with him, and I can still support him on it, but when I look at what's out there, there's nothing.
I think right now, because when you go back to 2016 and you realize so many of the Republican candidates in their districts outperformed Trump. I mean, you look at that, and that kind of was a red wave. Nobody was talking about a red wave. But if you look at those local elections and in those districts, those seats in the House where a number of them outperformed Trump, I guess where the difference for me in looking for, if you were to use that as the model, you would think, okay, the momentum really hasn't shifted this soon. But it often does, as you point out, the first 2 years of a presidency can often, it happened to Obama. It didn't happen right away with George W. Bush, but it might have happened if not for a 9/11 when there was a surge of support for then President Bush going into Afghanistan, going after Al Qaeda. But it is that rebound where, I mean, you look at 2016 and that huge red wave, huge shift in power for Republicans in general. And then that rebound, that snapback effect to, okay, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for Republicans to lose even control or at the very least a few seats. You and I were talking, recently about, okay, where are those up for grabs seats? And I think RCP has done a good job at keeping track of those right now. And in the Senate, I think it's still about seven that they say are up in the air, right? Not up for grabs, but up in the air. Really, you don't know where that's going to go because the polls are too close right now to show which direction that might be in.
We'll have a much better idea by the beginning of October.
Right.
I've always said that.
Yeah.
Normally, beginning of October, you have a much clearer stand as where they're going because people are back into their normal routine again.
Right. And so, there's a Tuesday of this week really doesn't set anything except for the fact that it really is in general, nationally, the national picture right now is still up in the air. No sign of a blue wave. Like you said, I haven't heard anybody ever mention a red wave this season. Maybe somebody did, but really there's no, it's not like the blue wave talk that there was. You see a Beto O'Rourke in Texas going up against Ted Cruz. Has a ton of money. Now he's not rejecting PAC, so there's going to be a ton of ads in Texas. Can he actually unseat Ted Cruz? Keep in mind that Ted Cruz, within his own party, isn't the most popular guy.
He was booed at the RNC.
And that's what I told friends recently. Go back to the summer of 2016, and he was booed off stage, the whole vote your conscience thing. And he was booed off stage, and that was really, we saw it as much of the party dismissing him and also the conservative portion of the Republican Party at that moment, at least for that election cycle.
Being rejected.
Yes. And so how much of that is still alive? How much of the support for the president still has that momentum? How much of the silent majority is there of the people that are saying, you know, all the criticism of Trump, it's ridiculous, and all these people that are attacking Trump supporters in public, it's ridiculous,
and by the way, that can have a huge effect.
Mm-hmm. That can be a real motivator.
And we'll touch on that and more coming up as we look at the analysis of Primary Tuesday that everybody seems to be involved in the predictions that they're making, all right. Coming up. Plus your calls and comments, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So we'll have more analysis coming up following the bottom of the hour on Primary Tuesday and what it means and if it actually means anything. Hmm. We'll also tell you about the Democrats in 10 California races that are running away from the Abolish ICE campaign.
Hmm.
Trump administration trying to open up land in California for fracking. De Blasio, this is my favorite story. De Blasio slams Fox News and says we would be a more unified country without them.
So would you say the same about MSNBC?
Well, I don't believe that his analysis is correct to begin with.
Right. I mean, if you were going to say that they're too partisan, that they're too right wing, well, then there you would have to say that there's something such as too left wing, which would be MSNBC
well,
in this case.
That would then you would then come to the conclusion that partisanship either way, holding
yes.
an opinion,
right.
holding a solid opinion is not unifying this country.
Exactly. Taking a position.
Holding
a position on any issue does not unify the country.
What this country will be unified when we take a poll and 100% of the people say, I don't know.
Yeah.
No comment.
Yeah. No, that will probably be under a dictatorship.
No, because that will be 100% agree with the Presidente.
Yes, exactly. Yes. That's where I was going with that. I mean, you're not going to get there, and nor should we.
The Manafort trial, not a good day.
Manafort,
You may be able to hurt Gates' credibility when it comes as you and I talked about in our pre-show meeting, bank fraud and other charges, but for not reporting income,
yeah.
That's the witnesses are the IRS.
When you had the IRS rep that testified, and you look at the evidence against Manafort, and I could see probably on 8 or 9 of these charges, you're not going to need Gates' testimony to get there with
right.
the jury.
Yep. China hits with more tariffs. Giuliani says it's all going to blow up, and the children's terrorist training camp in New Mexico. What a story that is.
Yeah. Crazy.
Man.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
There's a couple of different factors that can cause rain to persist over an area for several days. In this case, it's a stationary front located from north-central Texas into southern Oklahoma and central Arkansas. That's where we'll see the heaviest of rain showers today around the country. From the Dallas-Fort Worth area through Oklahoma City, then over to Little Rock on I-40, the Texarkana area set to potentially even see some flash flooding today. As we look for relief from Mother Nature in the West, I'm looking at long-range models on the GFS, and I don't see any rain for California for at least a week. Seattle, Washington will be sunny today, high 89. Los Angeles, clear, 93. Dallas, thunderstorms, 93. Kansas City, sunny and 94. Rain chances look better for Chicago tomorrow. Today, mostly cloudy and 86. Rain will be pushing into the mid-Atlantic and northeast today, part of that stationary front that I mentioned in the south. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
good or tough guys. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary. He's Eric. And so when we look at Tuesday's primary elections, and everyone seems to be jumping on it, what does this mean for the midterms? What does this mean for the midterms? I would rather than look at a specific congressional district, I would like, as you know, as we always do, look at the overall picture and see where we are right now. And where we are is when you look at politically where we are on one side in this country, and I'm going to guess it's roughly 50% of the people.
Yeah.
They hate Trump. And it's an insane hate. And it's an insane hate because Trump is the same Trump that he's always been for the last 40 years.
Yeah,
but
right.
you cannot look at where we are politically in this nation and say that that doesn't exist. And the hatred is even greater now than it was in 2016 because mm-hmm. he won. So that's on one side. There really are no issues. And any of the issues out there that the Democrats have been promoting, they are quickly running away from. Freebeacon.com, Democratic candidates in 10 key California races run away from abolish ICE campaign. When you think about it, the biggest issue over the last month has been abolish ICE. It's been about Ocasio-Cortez. Here we are. We're in August now. We're just a couple of months from Election Day. Mm-hmm. And the one issue that the Democrats have been talking about on immigration is basically was sanctuary cities, but now has moved into we need to abolish ICE. We need to get rid of ICE.
Yeah.
And that went on for the last month, and now you have Democrats running away from it. But what is an issue out there that would set the Democrats apart this time from 2016 or 2012? There really are no issues.
No.
And there's no issues that they're screaming about. It. As we said, the biggest protest going on, you know, over the last month has been the 20-something days in front of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Screaming and yelling about the Russian, you know, the Russian annex and the treasonous president. Yet none of them, you know, that's all symbolic. There's no substance to that because none of them wish to actually find out the truth. And so there's not even a solid issue there except we hate Trump. On the other side, there's a ton of issues out there that they're actually really concerned with. They are concerned with illegal immigration. They are concerned with immigration. They are concerned about economic growth in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They are concerned about having a consistent and tough foreign policy.
Yep.
And so that's really strong. So I can identify and tell you what each side is about right now. I can't tell you how that's going to I can't tell you definitively. That means the Democrats will win or the Republicans will win. Here's another one here because this is the wild card
mm-hmm.
that exists out there that really didn't exist as much as 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago. And it was the Rolling Stone article. I don't know if you saw it with Bret Easton Ellis.
Right.
The screenwriter, the author, American Psycho, Lesson Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting. And I sent this to quite a few people today that I know and said, how much do you think, you know, how much of the Democratic Party is slowly changing? And I bring that up because of what, you know, Trump was able to pull in.
Right.
And this question was asked in Rolling Stone to the screenwriter and author Bret Easton Ellis, who is gay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I just want to read the two last paragraphs here, the questions that were asked by Rolling Stone. You tweeted that you were done discussing politics with liberals at dinner. Is it because everyone plays the role of knee-jerk shock and outrage? Completely. I live with the Trump-hating millennial socialist. I am not. As my boyfriend will tell everyone, political. I'm interested in the theater of it, how each side plays the game and how the media has morphed with it. I have never seen liberals to be more annoying than they are now. These last few weeks really were a flipping point for me with the depression over the Supreme Court and the way the detention centers were being spun by the liberal media. It's obviously a game. Here's Rachel Maddow crying on TV and pictures of Trump detention centers. My stepfather, who was a Polish Jew, had his entire family wiped out when he was an infant. Throwing around words like Nazi, Gestapo, and comparisons to Germany is like, really, guys? We're going there? I've had enough. I think that's a reason why the hashtag walkaway movement is getting its 10 seconds of fame. Because there's a real reaction towards how the Democrats are expressing their disappointment. It's turning a lot of people off. That's why I call this a wild card. And then they ask him, as a gay man, what if your right to marry is suddenly taken away? Doesn't that anger you on a primal level? Mm. Well, that is suggesting that I believe in identity politics and that I vote with my penis. It's suggesting that immigration, the economy, and other policies matter so much less than whether I can marry a man. It's not something that I worry about or is on my mind. That's the problem with identity politics. It's what got Hillary into trouble. If you have a vagina, you had to vote for Hillary. This has seeped into a bedrock credo among a lot of people, and you've got to step back. People are not one-issue voters. I'm not going to vote as a gay man. And I don't think the idea of us not being allowed to marry is going to happen. Well, as you and I talked about the other day, well, it's not, because states could still do it.
Right.
Pence has his issues, but Trump is not an anti-gay president in any way, shape, or form. I also have gay friends who support and voted for Trump based on certain policies. It's not just about being gay and being able to marry. And I bring that up because that the demographic of gays in this country have been loyally Democratic for a long time. When you look at some of the most loyal demographics out there, and you and I have talked about this before, when it comes to wanting the least immigration in this country, the demographic that by far wants fewer legal immigrants is blacks.
Yeah.
And so when does the point of the, and I don't know what this is. Again, this I can't project out. I don't know when and how you're going to see the slow movement or whether 2016 was the beginning of that slow movement. It would have to be over a period of time where you have Democrats and loyal Democrat constituencies say, you know something, it's about time I stopped voting for symbolism and started voting for the substance on the actual issues that I believe in. And you know something, I'm not going to be a one-issue person. They've convinced me for years that I need to vote Democrat because I'm black. I need to vote Democrat because I'm gay. Well, wait a minute. What about the actual issues and how they affect me? Can I move past identity politics? And so that to me, again, for the midterms and for 2020 is a complete wild card. The other thing is when we talk about the midterm elections, the one thing that may be different, and I don't know, I can't look at every district and every race. It's impossible to do that. But I look at the fact that is it all on the left about Trump, even on the local races, or do the local issues or how the federal government and the relationship between a local district and the federal government and the issues actually come into being? Or in this election, just 2018, is it just about I support Trump, I hate Trump? That I don't know. I just don't know.
Right. Yeah,
and I don't think anybody knows.
And it's sometimes impossible to tell because sometimes you're not going to, again, that whole silent majority thing. But it works. in two directions. I mean, you can have a number of people that are tired of the treatment of Trump or his supporters, and or just simply approve the things that he's done and would like to see more of it and are willing to show up to support those candidates in his party. And then you can have his supporters who decide they're going to stay, who were strong supporters. I don't know how much of a fall off there is in that regard, given the recent polls right now, of his polls, job approval ratings rising. But if there is any of that at play and you have enough of those Republicans that stay home in November, that's what happened to George W. Bush in 2006. I don't know that that is the case.
Oh, by the way, what I was reading there, in case you just tuned in, was Brett Easton Ellis, who is a screenwriter and an author, mm-hmm. American Psycho, among others.
And you and I had the discussion off the air as we were kind of going through, you know, his writings yesterday morning, going through what you just shared. And we were talking about how much of that is at play on the left. Because it can be a very powerful motivator. You know, to say, look, enough is enough. This is ridiculous. Not that you necessarily are 100%, you know, going to be at every rally Trump supporter, but that you draw the line in the sand somewhere and you're done with the behavior from far too many on the left. The most vocal part of the left right now is about as ridiculous as they have been. Ever. I've never seen it this ridiculous. And I can't imagine being on the left thinking, you know, there's a ton of social issues that I'm concerned about, but right now, what I can't stand is this kind of behavior from the people on the left. Because it is ridiculous. It's an attack that's built in hatred. It's not built in politics. It's not even built on social issues. They want you to think it is, but it's not. It is about being absurdly angry that she didn't win. I mean, that's what this really, that's where this all began for the rank and file. The party, they're probably just absurdly angry that their plan didn't work. With the whole dossier thing. But for the rank and file, it's about they, because what were they told? Keep in mind, it was the media that kept repeating, oh, 95%, 95%, 95% sure she's going to win. Even after the election, Obama, there was always a 20% chance he was going to win. No, the election's actually already happened. That's a higher number.
But he said it in a very eloquent tone.
Yes, so, exactly.
So people took that seriously, yes. As somebody who was thoughtful.
Right, exactly. Or arrogant.
It's always a 20% chance. No, it's Obama, higher. There was a 100% chance because he won!
Yeah, it's already taken place. But see, that's it. They did. They thought, I believe, way too many on the far left believed they had won the White House forever.
That America had
changed forever.
That was
in their favor.
You know, and people forget about that because that was being talked about then. Remember the summer of 2016.
Yeah.
Remember the articles that were being written when we would bring them up on the show that said there may never be another Republican president. They may never be able to win the presidency again because of the way that the country is shifting and this clear victory by Hillary Clinton that's coming up.
And the fact that he was either the presumptive nominee or officially the nominee while that narrative was going on. You know, and they were thinking, no, there's no way he's going to win. So Republicans might not ever win.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So there you go. We'll get your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour.
Yeah.
A lot of people wanting to comment on what the primary Tuesday in August means for the midterms. I'm chuckling saying that as you see that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I think when you go through when we finally get to the confirmation hearings or hearing for Kavanaugh, and I suspect he will be seated. If you look at the head count where it is right now, there's no reason to believe that head count's going to change. So it looks like he will be confirmed. But if that does happen and he's seated in early October on the Supreme Court, I think that in and of itself is going to motivate a lot of the Republican base to say, you know what, if there's even a chance to get one more seated, right, then we want to make sure that we have the numbers to get through that confirmation process.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
And I'm telling you, this story here, there's a headline from Fox. Man arrested at extremist Muslim New Mexico compound was training kids to commit school shootings.
Wow.
The father of a missing three-year-old who was arrested at a New Mexico compound linked to extremist Muslims last week was training children to commit school shootings, court documents filed on Wednesday revealed. Prosecutors allege that Sarah Wajah, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, was conducting weapons training on the compound where 11 children were found hungry and living in squalor. They asked that he be held without bail. Wahaj is the son of a Brooklyn imam who was named by prosecutors as an unindicted co-conspirator in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, the New York Post reported. Authorities raided the compound on Friday after a months-long search investigating the disappearance of a boy with severe medical issues who went missing from Georgia in December. On Monday, a child's remains were found on the property, but authorities were working on a positive identification and did not confirm if the remains were that of a missing boy. Four other people were arrested on the property and face child abuse charges. The makeshift compound located near the Colorado border was found shielded by old tires, wooden pallets, and other debris. Upon arrival, Wahaj was heavily armed with an AR-15 rifle, five loaded 30-round magazines, and four loaded pistols, including one in his pocket when he was taken down, said Sheriff Jerry Hograff. The sheriff said the children ages 1 to 15 look like third world country refugees, not only with no food or fresh water, but with no shoes, personal hygiene, and basically dirty rags for clothing. The only food investigators found were some potatoes and a box of rice inside of a dirty trailer, the sheriff said, adding that the living conditions were the, quote, ugliest looking, filthiest, end of quote, he's ever seen. The sheriff previously said the occupants of the compound were most likely heavily armed and considered extremist of the Muslim belief. In the warrant made public on Monday, Wahaj told the missing boy's mother that he wanted to perform an exorcism on his then three-year-old son because he was possessed by the devil. The missing child reportedly suffered from seizures and could not walk.
Mm. Wow. I mean, it just makes you wonder how something like this happens.
I wonder how, you know, there's a lot of places where it can be quite desolate, as we know. Mm-hmm. I wonder who tipped off the sheriff. I wonder, the children 1 through 15, whose children are they?
Well, according to the story at Fox News, there was a search at this the compound that basically came after this two-month investigation that included the FBI. They had been surveilling this area, agents had been, for a few weeks, and did not find any probable cause. They couldn't find a probable cause to search the property. And that changed when some detectives here basically got a, and I lost the part on this page that I'm on.
Was that when the child was
said was the message, we're starving. We need, oh, and okay. Here's the, there was a, he said there was a detective that forwarded a message to the local sheriff that said initially he had been sent this message by a third party saying, we are starving and need food and water. And so apparently that was it, some kind of message that got out. And if you look at, I mean, if it's a group of children, you know, again, I mean, where is it I guess it's like you said, if it's so desolate, they'd been doing surveillance for weeks and couldn't find probable cause to get in because, you know, these children don't have the means to move about on that compound, really. If they had no food, no water, no clothing, well, they're malnourished, which means they have little to no energy. Wow. Sad, maddening, and scary. All at the same time.
We'll keep you updated on that story. This story I enjoyed. A new study published in the Journal of Social and Personal Relationships found that an overwhelming majority of folks would not date a transgender person, but wish to date a person of the sex and corresponding gender they are attracted to. When the study is broken down further, a near majority of those who claim that they would date a trans person did so in relation to their biological sexual orientation, not in line with the gender the trans person believes themselves to be. In other words, people generally only wish to date people who belong to the sex they want to date. This was not only shocking to a pro-LGBTQ blog, but it was chalked up to discrimination driven by transphobia. Whoa, 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 wait a minute. How come what you want is okay, but what I want isn't okay?
And if you don't want something, is that a phobia?
Right.
Is it heterophobia?
Yeah.
Non-transgender phobia?
Why can't you want what you want and I want what I want? Why do you care what I want? Why do I have to want you? For any reason.
Why do you want me to want you? In the words of Cheap Trick.
I was thinking of Lobo from the 70s. Want you to want me.
or Lobo. But it's insanity.
I thought you were quoting Lobo, and I'm like, you're saying, well, because Cheap Trick. I'm like, oh, thank God.
So wait a minute. You have a preference. I have a preference.
Right.
But if my, which means it includes, in both parties, it includes a certain type of individual.
Right.
Which means it excludes every other type of individual by default.
Yes.
But that exclusion on my part is hatred.
Right.
But not on your part.
You know, I wish to date you, but the 1,000 people around you, I have no interest in dating. Why, you're something phobia. I'm not sure what it is.
I represent the H community. Why are you anti-H? Hetero.
I thought it was Harley.
No, that's a different community. Trust me. Filled with lots of weirdos. I know one.
But that's the first thing I'm ever going to go, well, excuse me. You're criticizing me for my choices. You've made your choices.
As a proud member of the heterosexual community, I can say that I'm not going to stand for this. I probably won't sit down for it either, but I'm definitely... What's the phrase been this? What's the answer been to every question this week? I'm not ruling it out. Well, I'm not ruling it in. But that's the insanity.
I just love it when people start saying, "Well, wait a minute, I want to have whatever." Your choices are bigoted for your what you want for your personal life.
Right.
You're immoral.
Right.
Wait a minute. If you can want whatever you want. That may not be viewed in the majority of opinion as what other people would want, and you're upset at that. Why? You as an individual should be free to want whatever you want as long as it's legal.
Right.
And I should be able to want whatever I want as long as it's within the law. Why do you care what I want? And why are you upset if I don't want you? I have the right to want what I want because you have the right to want what you want. This is getting too easy.
Well, this is people finding oppression where it doesn't exist. I mentioned that yesterday, that it's really not about becoming a victim or making yourself a victim anymore. It's about pointing to someone as an aggressor or an oppressor. And so if you have a different preference other than their group, you're an oppressor. That's the insanity.
I'm sorry, but I find it actually, humorous. Now the left is getting... If you don't want me and the way that I am, then you're wrong. What are you going to do? You force the government now? Is that going to be the next thing? I'm transgender, and the government should force you to date me.
Yeah.
I have a right to date you. Is that what's coming next? I mean, that would be the natural progression, right? I have a right. I have a right to date you. Well, what about my right not to date you? No.
Well, I think for them, it's about keeping this constant state of what they want you to believe is oppression. They don't really want any follow-up. They want to point to the world and say, you're still not accepting us because you refuse to date us. Well,
right.
Get in line.
Whoa. Being tolerant isn't good enough. Hey, do whatever you want to do, but I don't have to buy into it. I don't have to buy in. Yeah. To what your mindset is, and I don't have to date you, but go ahead, do what you wish to do. That's not enough. I need to
find an oppressor.
I need to label you as an oppressor because you won't date me. The fact that you tolerate me is not enough. Not only must you accept me, you must date me.
Well, because think about what happened.
God, this is insane.
It was never about acceptance. We've talked about
it. No, it was never. Or tolerance.
No. So you have the Hollywood, is mainstreamed, the LGBTQ community for a number of years now, right? Well, okay, so there are no oppressors. So you got to find a new way to feel oppressed. This is the new way. Next, it will be, what? You're not going to marry me? What? I mean, it's...
Man, I'd have the biggest complaint.
Yeah,
everybody's,
exactly.
I just thought about that.
Well, if they're...
I'm the biggest victim. Everybody has oppressed me.
Well, I was about to say, if their concern is, if they're being oppressed because people won't date them, they need to get in line far behind you. Really?
That's right. I have got the Magnar. You go to the front of the line here.
Exactly. We're so sorry. Sorry. The LGBTQ community wants to apologize to Mr. Magnar. We're sorry. We'll just be right over here.
Just so people know, I'm the single one on the show. So
yeah. And frankly, I still have to convince her. It's been 30 years, but I'm still working on it.
Oh, you're not.
I'm a wonderful guy, I promise. No, I mean, it is that, though. So when they see the mainstreaming of it by Hollywood, now, because it was never about tolerance or acceptance, well, where do you go next? When there are no more oppressors, you got to find new ones. And that would be, well, what do you mean you have a preference? That doesn't include me. Yeah. Doesn't include a lot of people. Well, that's discrimination. Actually, you're right. That's the definition of discriminating.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold it. I'm also the oppressor. I've rejected everyone.
Yes, exactly.
I'm both the victim and the oppressor.
Right.
Okay.
And that's the whole thing.
What a unique position to be in.
Yes.
Victim and oppressor at the same time.
Well, I mean, we saw it with the Facebook executive who said, it's wrong that I made $500 million inside of 3 years. I'm the problem.
Right.
He's protesting himself.
And
the stand-up comedian.
He really isn't, though, because if he was truly protesting himself, he would just give the money away.
Well, the gay stand-up comedian, she said self-deprecating humor was wrong. Making fun of herself was part of the problem. Because as a lesbian, she's marginalized. How dare she marginalize herself? She's protesting against her.
You think about it, we've been marginalizing ourselves for what now? For me, like 36 years in radio.
And for good reason.
29 in talk.
Right. I'm not going to stop. I have a lot of more problems with me than people even know. And it's been decades.
I didn't even realize that should have been a Why We're Doomed update.
Well, it is, because it's people screaming, I need to find an oppressor. Well, they found one. People who choose not to date them.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, the Freightliner Team Run Smart Pros are on the road hauling freight just like you. Driver Jeff Clark tells us about his Freightliner and his role as a Team Run Smart Pro.
I've got the 2018 new Cascadia. It's got the 400 downspeed engine with 1750 torque. I've got the 228 rear ends. It's got Detroit Assurance system as far as the collision mitigation system and that type of thing. I work a lot with the collision mitigation system in showing drivers how that works. To me, the collision mitigation system becomes a training tool. Remember the old Smith system where we were taught to think 7 second following distance, think out 15 seconds? If you start relating that to collision mitigation system, the idea is most collision mitigation systems don't interact until 3.5 seconds. So the goal is to get drivers to increase their following distance, out-anticipate the machine, because the machine anticipates at 3.5 seconds. If you're thinking out 4.5 to 5 seconds, keeping the machine from interacting, from doing any of the haptic brake events, you'll actually start increasing your fuel mileage. And most maintenance managers will tell you the drivers who get the best fuel mileage also have the lowest maintenance costs.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Wow, we had sort of referred to it yesterday when we talked about Elon Musk.
Yeah, right.
But man, and now the SEC looking in to see whether when he tweeted out that he had the funding, whether he really had the funding or whether he did not have the funding.
Yeah, because the idea would be, or I guess the question the SEC would have is that if you had the funding and made that statement of possibly taking your company
Tesla
private,
yes,
then that's one thing, because then that would be a real consideration. But if you had not secured funding, if there was no reason to believe, no real reason to believe that you were going to secure that funding, then that could be seen as trying to
manipulate
pump up your stock.
Right.
and get investors on board, even though that would be a temporary move by investors, typically. So we'll see where it comes out. Because the Wall Street Journal was asking the question,
yeah,
you know, who in the world is going to invest $70 billion into this company? Because right now, everybody from the investment standpoint is looking at it as a loser.
Under U.S. law, companies and corporate officers cannot give shareholders misleading information about meaningful company events. Mr. Musk could also be in trouble if regulators develop evidence that he made a statement aimed at goosing his company's share price.
Right.
That's a quote from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see where that comes out. But it was interesting to see it actually, the SEC actually taking action on it.
And did he comment yesterday on it?
I didn't see anything else.
Neither did I.
Have no fear. Eric Hurley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal. Coming up 2 weeks from today, starting 2 weeks from today, the Great American Trucking Show in Dallas, in downtown Dallas. And it's going to be at the Convention Center, so you want to make sure you go to truckshow.com. You can get all the details there. You can also register online. You don't have to stand in line to register. You can just walk up and get your badge when you get there. But if you go to truckshow.com, you can find out all the details about the Great American Trucking Show. Red Eye Radio will be out there with lots of guests and lots of really great giveaways, thanks to our sponsors. So make sure that you are out there. Again, the Great American Trucking Show coming up August 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the Convention Center in downtown Dallas. Truckshow.com.
You know, you and I were earlier talking about the Manafort trial, and it wasn't a good day yesterday as IRS agents were testifying, and we said, look, with the bank fraud and other charges against him, what, 32 charges.
Mm-hmm.
The jury could look at it and say, no, it was Gates. The problem that he's having is with the not reporting income that the IRS agents were testifying today on. And we had a caller earlier, an emailer who asked the question to us saying, well, did they ask the IRS agents why they didn't prosecute before? Mm. IRS agents don't prosecute.
Right.
Prosecutors prosecute.
Yeah, they would basically hand over a case to on the prosecutorial side. If there is an IRS infraction like that would warrant a penalty by the IRS, then you'll get contact by the IRS through a letter. But in terms of breaking the law on the prosecutorial side, on that level, that's up to what the prosecutor has available to them, and they'll make that decision based on what evidence they have.
And I'm not sure why they asked the question, because they didn't get into more detail, because what I would ask is, well, what do you expect would happen, that the IRS agents or the prosecutors would state, hypothetically, were you thinking that they would state, well, we just decided, you know, we know he broke the law before, but we weren't going to prosecute. Now Trump's president, and he worked for Trump, and therefore we're going to prosecute him now. That would make a difference in what the jury. Now, number one, whether this judge would actually allow that is mm-hmm. is one thing,
mm-hmm.
but number two, whether that would make the judge say, oh, okay, since it was a political prosecution, even though he did not report his income and was attempting to evade taxes, well, it's okay. We're not going to convict him because we believe that it was a political prosecution, even though we believe the evidence is there to show that he did do it. Is that what you were expecting? Because whether it's political or not, does not get to the heart of the matter of was the law broken.
And that's what it comes down to. And this is exactly what T.S. Ellis was saying the other day when he called out the, you know, the prosecution side, saying to Andres, you guys need to tone down essentially the political rhetoric aspect of this and the words like oligarch and everything else that you're using, because it implies that he was dealing with people and those people were criminals, and we don't know that. They may be good people or bad people, but that's not the point here. You're here to pursue these charges. You're here to prove that he committed these very crimes. What the other parties that were involved in it really don't matter for this trial.
And the only point that we were making, look, I don't have the evidence in front of me. So, we're just speculating on what we know from the reports of the trial. But if it was bank fraud, the defense attorneys would go after Gates and say, no, you did it on your own in order to benefit you here. You just, you know, you struck a deal with the prosecutor, so you're blaming him for something that you actually did.
Right.
When it comes to evading income, you are in charge of your own tax returns, mm-hmm. irrespective of who does them for you. Mm-hmm. And if you're evading taxes, the paper trail is there. That's the problem, as we stated earlier. The paper trail is there. Irrespective of whether it's a political prosecution or not, mm-hmm. that, well, we were going to let him go a few years ago, if that's what our listener was trying to indicate, that if there wasn't a crime then, there wasn't a crime now. Well, either you have the evidence for evading taxes or you don't.
Yeah, and the defense, their position on this is this money was to be used as a business loan. These were business loans. This was not income. And, you know, that again becomes something where the defense is going to, because of the charges brought,
right,
the defense is going to have to show the jury in this case that money was used and set aside, which typically would be in a separate account. If you're looking to do that, you would do that in a separate account under the business name, and then you would have a whole long line of investments and expenditures that you would, you know, show for
there would
for that
be a
loan.
There would be a paper trail.
Yep, and you would, and that's where they're mm-hmm. going to have to come up with their side. The prosecution does have documents and records. What does that actually prove? That's something
right.
We don't know.
We don't know. So again, the political part of it may matter to you.
Mm-hmm.
In all likelihood, especially with the way that this judge has challenged, you know, the prosecution on the politics of it,
right?
This seems to be a judge. And again, I didn't hear him comment, you know, on the political side of the tax evasion portion of it. But the paper trail is either there or the paper trail. The paper trail and the witnesses are either there or they're not there. But most likely what in these particular cases would show tax evasion or not tax evasion would be a paper trail or a lack of a paper trail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the politics of why they chose to prosecute now versus back then wouldn't matter to a jury.
Right. It's what evidence do you have
right.
now?
And as they say in tax cases to begin with,
mm-hmm.
if a jury doesn't believe that you're paying your taxes and you make a lot of money, most juries don't like that.
Right. This is why, I mean, they were, you know, the defense was trying to get this trial. There are two different trials Manafort is facing. His defense attorneys had the choice of keeping them separate, the one in Virginia, which is this one, and the next one, which is in Washington. They could have actually chosen to put them together, so it would be all in one trial. And they chose not to do that. Part of the reason is because it was thought that they were trying to get a more sympathetic jury in Virginia, and if that were going to be the first trial, which it was, and they even tried to move it to Roanoke out of this northern part of Virginia here because they believed that the jury makeup would be friendlier, more Trump supporters maybe in that pool of jurors. But they didn't get it moved to Roanoke, and we have no idea about the political makeup of the six men and six women on the jury now. But that was the attempt, anyway, by the defense attorney. I don't know that again, if you get down to documentation, the question then is, okay, does it show that he was in control of that? But then it gets back also to the authority. Well, when it comes to filing your taxes, you ultimately are responsible, as you just mentioned. And so in this case, it would be on the $16.5 million, where, you know, there's a tax evasion charge. Can you show that that was a business loan? Because it, according to the prosecutors, doesn't look like a business loan. It looks like money you made somewhere, money you were given for whatever work. So that will be the back and forth over the next couple of days. The star witness, Gates, is done. 3 days of testimony. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was about primarily on Wednesday, you know, going after him for the lying and everything else. Even the defense attorney brought up other affairs. They had covered the affair that he had 10 years ago when he was on the stand earlier this week. Then on Wednesday, the defense attorney asked a question about other affairs. The prosecutors objected. And they did not pursue that. The defense attorney did not pursue that. And there was no answer given by Gates. But the idea is to make him look like a liar. And basically, hey, just because you broke the law or you cheated here or you did this doesn't mean Manafort did. You know, you're just trying to bring your former boss down just to get this deal.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Carney. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to Ron on Long Island. Ron, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. About this trial and about what's going on, my whole concern here is that all of this seems to have emanated, of course, from investigations based on, I would imagine, this Pfizer warrant that was all-encompassing, that was supposed to allow them to try to get the president, our seated president right now, in any way possible. It has not led there. It's now led astray. And with that in mind, would this not be, because I'm confused about it, would this not be a matter of the fruit of the poison tree where whatever they're gaining, even with the knowledge of an actual crime, just like a police officer going through a car and it turns out that that what he was looking for was not allowable in court because it was not up to the snuff of what he was supposed to be doing procedurally and legally. And I'm wondering how this falls into where we stand now. And it seems that unless I'm just completely off the mark myself,
well, Rosenstein,
I would like to hear about what you think about that.
Rosenstein's order, direct order for the special prosecutor really was wide. I mean, it was, and that's our concern is where it all began, is the language in that directive to the Mueller team gave Mueller a ton of room to pursue pretty much anything that he found along the way.
But the problem with that is, and we've thought about Michael Flynn the whole time, is that why his prosecution is being delayed But the FISA warrant itself, from what I know, I mean, from the information I know, is not related at all to the Manafort investigation. The Department of Justice was investigating Manafort before the FISA warrant was ever written.
And we don't know if it's related to Flynn. It could be. I guess the question would be, would those investigators have been there to talk to Flynn in the first place? Remember, he pleaded guilty to lying to investigators. Would that be the case if they weren't supposed to be there except for that warrant? And if that warrant was ill-gotten, then that would say no. We don't know why the Flynn sentencing hearing has been delayed three times now. And because if you have someone who pleaded guilty, and thanks for the call, Ron, it should be a no-brainer you move forward with.
But I don't know of any, again, we don't know what Mueller has gotten or Mueller has used.
Right.
Hypothetically, if Mueller used information from the FISA warrant to get additional information that was used to charge, and hypothetically, if they convict Manafort, at that point, yes. I don't know how you connect the dots from the FISA warrant to the charges that Manafort is facing. From just looking at it from the outside. Again, we don't know everything, but what we know, there doesn't seem to be a relationship there.
No, the concern again for me is that the directive from the Deputy Attorney General for Mueller and his team was just so generalized in its language that it allowed them to pursue a number of things that had nothing to do with the election, nothing to do with Russians and the team, the campaign.
It had nothing to do with the specific crime. We know that. There's...
Well, and that was it. It wasn't his placement, his assignment to begin with. Didn't start with an actual crime being identified.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. How's everybody doing? Huh?
I'm doing great.
All right. So everybody has their predictions of what's going to happen for the midterms. That's good to see. When in reality, nobody knows.
Yeah.
That's why when you said in our pre-show meeting, you said, 50-50. And that, to me, is not a cop-out. It's the fact that we live in a 50-50 nation.
Yeah. We saw
2016 what happened.
Yeah.
That's as close as 50-50 as you can, as you can really get. So... as we have brought up earlier, all the different variables that exist out there, all the different opinions that exist out there, what the Democrats are thinking, what the Republicans are thinking, what liberals are thinking, what conservatives are thinking, the fact that you've got Democrats out there, 10 of them in California, when asked about ICE, no, we need to keep ICE,
Right.
You see the change in strategy where Democrats now seem to be saying, okay, we can't, all right, we're really left, but we really can't admit that we're left anymore. So we got to go back to where we were pre-2006 and pretend that we're something that we are not. And as we have always said, people love to be BS'd. So we don't know how many people might be BS'd or wish to go back to that time where they believed that Democrats are one thing when actually Democrats are another thing.
You know, it really was a slowly calculated kind of, you know, point that I got to earlier in the day on Wednesday of that whole 50-50 thing, because, you know, just reading through the reaction and the interesting excuse making by the left, well, see, they don't have to win. That, well, no, the idea is that you have to win if they want the power. I mean, I know what they were trying to say, that on the primary, they don't have to show that blue wave.
Well, they're showing the momentum because you have a ton of people that believe that they should have taken that district by 15, 20 points.
Right. Right, right. Ohio 12, I'm guessing.
Ohio 12, yes.
That you're talking about. Yes. And so when you look at that, I go back to the, I guess it was just a few days, maybe the week before the election in 2016, when someone had made the comment on the air to you, you're going to be surprised when Trump wins. And your response was, no, actually, I'll be surprised if he doesn't win. If you look historically, when right. you have a very sluggish economy and a two-term president, then the opposite party will win. Right. And so that's kind of applying that historic trend of the back and forth and the importance of those in the middle and in that swing vote, that whole thing. So I kind of applied that basically throughout the day as I'm reading through some of the reaction and analysis of the primaries this week. And when you do that, it is about, OK, there was actually a red wave. Take the presidential race out of 2016 and look at the shift in power that went in favor of the Republicans in that same election. And it was huge. It was massive. But there's also that pendulum effect. You've got a president now, and then halfway through his first term, now we'll be judged on things. The party will be judged on things, and a number of things will kind of snap back. So it's not that I see a blue wave. I think it's a given historically, not that everything is going to apply, but historically it's a given that there would be some rebound by the Democrats. The question is how much?
We look at but as we have said before, you need to also throw into the mix the uniqueness of 2016, where
yes.
somebody unprecedented, somebody who has never
Yeah.
run for political office, became president of the United States.
Right.
That showed a huge shift in the United States mentality that you need somebody who is an experienced politician to be president of the United States. That was thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. Where are we today after that huge, unprecedented wave hit for people willing to elect somebody who had never held elective office before? The other thing is, when we look at the polls this far out, and we've talked about this before, are really meaningless if the election were held today. Well, the election's not being held today.
Right.
We have talked about the fact that, we always get this. The polls are never right. Actually, they are. The closer you get to the election, we documented it for 2016, we documented it for 2012, we documented it for 2008. The polls that actually were very, very close. And there were a number of polls that were right on mm-hmm. with the vote count mm-hmm. and the percentages of what Hillary got and Donald Trump got. They were accurate. Now, what they didn't see was the 300,000 or 400,000 people in those three states that made the difference. That they may have included them into those people may have been overall included into the vote total, but it wasn't broken down into those particular states. But as we now know, both campaigns knew that there was a shift like 3 weeks out.
Right.
2 to 3 weeks out. They saw it in their internal polling. They saw it in those states. Democrats started worrying behind the scenes. And why? Because their internal polls were showing them, when they were looking specifically at the states, that there was a turn in those particular states. So polls actually can give you an indication, but they give you an indication when it's closer to an election, because at that point, people, I think, that are polled are actually more serious. Let me give you an example here. All right?
Okay.
And I'd love to get Scott Rasmussen back on one of these days and ask him about this, because a poll was done, the Ipsos poll was done on, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, on the number of Republicans that would give Trump the power to shut down the media. You see that poll?
Yeah.
Right. I'm reading this from the Daily Beast. Freedom of the press may be guaranteed in the Constitution, but a plurality of Republicans want to give President Trump the authority to close down certain news outlets, according to a new public opinion survey conducted and provided exclusively to the Daily Beast. The findings present a sobering picture for the Fourth Estate, with respondents showing diminished trust in the media and increased support for punitive measures against its members. They also illustrate the extent to which Trump's anti-press drumbeat has shaped public opinion about the role the media plays in covering the administration. All right, so here it is, okay?
All right.
All told, 43% of self-identified Republicans said they believe the president should have the authority to close down news outlets engaged in bad behavior. 43%. Only 36% disagreed with that statement. But then asked specifically if Trump should close down specific outlets, including CNN, The Washington Post, and The New York Times, it was 23%. So when you ask a generalized question like that to people in a situation where it isn't going to be done, it will never be done in this country, it is a hypothetical. And so 43%, yeah, he should have the power to shut it down. Do you really believe that 43% of Republicans want to give the president, whether it's Trump or the presidency, the ability to shut down the media? No.
That's this ridiculous behavior in this case on the part of the pollster, but then the media taking that and making it as if it were real. It reminds me of the same kind of approach that CNN had when Van Jones rolling up his sleeves to convince the electors to change their minds. Well, some of them did, and it worked in favor of Trump, not against him. But that's it. They want you to believe that this is something real, that it actually would get to that point.
Well, my point is, in polls, unless it becomes real, and it becomes real a couple of weeks out from an election, when it really starts getting closer and people start sitting down with their friends or sitting down with themselves and saying, okay, how am I going to vote here and what am I going to do and everything else? And you see, that's when the polls start getting much more accurate as you get much closer to the election.
Right.
And then, as we have seen, you know, you and I looked at the research that was done on all the polling. I think it was for 2012 and 2016. And you can see, even a month out, that as it gets closer, how many polls start more accurately portraying and get closer to the final result of what happens on election day. And why? That's because the people are getting more serious the reality of it. So when you ask people, wow, you think the president should have the authority to close down the news outlets? Yeah, close them down. Well, then you say, well, then should they close down CNN, The Washington Post, and The New York Times? Well, it was 43. All of a sudden, it's down to 23% of Republicans.
Yeah.
Why? Because then you're starting to name certain scenarios, and it becomes a little bit more real, and people say, okay, I don't like them, but no, they shouldn't shut them down, because that means that the majority of Republicans absolutely disagreed with doing that. And then if you ask the question, should Donald Trump and then the next Democrat president be able to shut down the press, that's bringing much more reality to it.
Yeah.
At the point where I'm sure it would be the vast majority of people say absolutely not. But my point is how polls are done, how the questions are asked, but also how close to reality the question being asked people is also determines what their answer is going to be.
It's almost like the, you know, what I've said about starting, a point on a false premise. Everything sounds logical. What, you know, that follows, it sounds logical, but it's not, because it's also based on that false premise. Well, when you look at these types of questions and then how the media takes these scenarios, in this case, this question being asked by this pollster, and then runs with it basically to give it more steam and more energy than it really deserves. It is just like that Van Jones thing, rolling up their sleeves. Not going to happen.
Well,
grassroots,
right.
Not going to happen. But they want you to believe that it is a very distinct possibility. And I don't know what's going on in these newsrooms where they would take this and say, all right, it might be a cocktail discussion, but it's floated with language that makes it sound like there is this distinct possibility. Because what is it? Why was the poll taken? Well, Jim Acosta.
Right.
It was taken because the media doesn't like Trump, and Trump doesn't like the media. It's taken because, you know, the pollster, and good for them, they're getting a little bit of publicity out of this, and they float it. But the media runs with it, again, as if it's something that's going to, you know, it's going to go somewhere. And it's not.
But it's also the my point was to focus on the election polls that are being taken out.
Right.
That's why they're meaningless, because we're not close to reality yet. The reality of the actual election and who you're going to vote for and what you're going to do, and the momentum that's driven and will be driven, that is not at all in a primary compared to what it will be, especially in a Trump-promoted midterm when he gets out there and starts marketing. I don't know. Again, that's why we have said we don't know. But I use this poll as an example, because I can tell you right now, the vast majority, 95%, 98% of Republicans, if there was ever a vote, should the president, which means from now on, any Republican or Democrat president, be able to shut down the media of their choice.
Mm-hmm.
If that was put before them, they'd say absolutely not. If it was reality,
yes. If it actually was going to happen,
right.
and to bring it all hypothetical, exactly, and to bring it all together, you know, we go back to the whole blue wave thing that started a few months ago. Well, what was that based on? Well, very early polls, at the most, but it was also based on this momentum that was given to polls that at that point didn't matter. And to your point, won't matter until you're down to an actual decision. People in their everyday lives are down to the actual decision, and not just the binary decision.
Well,
not just the whether I will vote for this person or that person, but also will I actually show up?
Well, we do live in a nation that loves predictions, even though the majority are wrong, and we still are suckers to listen to them. Well, this person said this, doesn't mean anything.
Right. And you know, I predict that will continue.
remember in what was it, 2012 with Karl Rove and everybody on on that election?
Yeah.
And you know, people are making predictions all the way up to the last minute that are completely wrong.
2016.
And you know, again, to me, predictions at times come more from, I don't know, people are paying me to make these predictions, even though I might be 100% wrong. I make a living out of it. It's the same thing for sports. Who do you think is going to win the game? As I always say, I have no idea.
Right.
It's the dumbest thing that we do. That's, to me, one of the dumbest things we do as Americans, is we make predictions and we try to make our predictions credible.
And the vast
majority of our predictions are not credible.
I will make this prediction, and it will be true. On and after Election Day, the person in each race that gets the most votes will win.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Toronto Radio, I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
I wanted to make that point because we were talking, my prediction, which will come true, applies to a midterm because it's not electoral votes that you're talking about. So the person that wins will be the person. I predict
that
in each race, the one who gets the most votes will win, because we have to explain that. Sometimes people forget.
Let's go to Jim in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Jim, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
My question is, what do you think about having reporters that are reporting news, not just so giving their opinion, that they are licensed? I'm a truck driver, and I'm a licensed to drive a truck. Teachers are licensed to teach. Lawyers are licensed to do what they do.
Well, the difference would be the difference would be that some of the things that you have to do, Jim, to get your CDL involves safety. And that is, you know, you're in control of tens of thousands of pounds of freight while you're out there on the road that other people on the road with you. In the case of the media, not that they can't do damage, this isn't the same thing. I don't want the what would that mean in the case of the media? Really nothing. It would be kind of a meaningless process for them just to show something, and really still would not hold them accountable for anything. When we have the government, if they really wanted to, if the government wants to start truly punishing the media, we're in a bad place. Trump's not trying to punish the media. The thing that happened with Acosta, the thing that's happened with these reporters that have been disruptive in these press conferences, those nobody has, no given reporter has the right to be a part of that White House core. And thank you, Jim, we're out of time. So CNN, as they said, can send somebody else.
My answer is shorter. No.
Yeah. The answer is no, because I don't want that. I don't want the government going through that. I don't want them controlling that. And for VDO Roadlog, here's your forecast.
There's a couple of different factors that can cause rain to persist over an area for several days. In this case, it's a stationary front located from north-central Texas into southern Oklahoma and central Arkansas. That's where we'll see the heaviest of rain showers today around the country. From the Dallas-Fort Worth area through Oklahoma City, then over to Little Rock on I-40, the Texarkana area, set to potentially even see some flash flooding today. As we look for relief from Mother Nature in the West, I'm looking at long-range models on the GFS, and I don't see any rain for California for at least a week. Seattle, Washington will be sunny today, high 89. Los Angeles, clear, 93. Dallas, thunderstorms, 93. Kansas City, sunny and 94. Rain chances look better for Chicago tomorrow. Today, mostly cloudy and 86. Rain will be pushing into the mid-Atlantic and northeast today, part of that stationary front that I mentioned in the south. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Save Society, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara, Red Eye Radio.
And failing miserably.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Huge failure.
866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Welcome and good morning. Let's go to Chris in Battle Creek, Michigan. Chris, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio about Mueller. And by the way, we didn't even get to what Giuliani said yesterday. We will in a little bit. But Chris, hearing from Chris was more important than hearing from Giuliani. Even.
Definitely.
Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Love your guys' show.
Thank you.
What's up?
What I'm calling about is I'm curious if Mueller, when he eventually puts out his report, because I believe that's all that's going to happen, when he puts out his report, if it doesn't include the Hillary Clinton collusion that is basically proven, would that lend credibility to Trump's claim about Mueller's investigation just being a Democratic witch hunt?
There's the credibility is there anyway. I don't know that the president needs to make the claim. He's making the claim, and so are a lot of us, that this really is a witch hunt. But
right. But would the validity of the report still be...
No, and here's...
Would the report be valid if it doesn't include that?
Well, it's not going to be... In my mind, it's not probably not going to be valid if it doesn't include that. And I guess we'd have to wait and see. But if it All doesn't, right. For the left, no, because they'll look at it and see... They'll go back to the assignment essentially by Rosenstein and say, well, the assignment didn't include the DNC and Hillary, and that was our problem to begin with.
Yeah.
If you thought the Russians were colluding, if you thought, well, the Russians were trying to work with any American to try and influence the election, you would include, by the way, a number of Americans, not just people with any given campaign. But if you were going to include people with a campaign, you would include both campaigns and both parties.
All right,
but
now,
no, they didn't right. do that.
Let me, I'm going to try to be completely unbiased here. No, I'm going to try to take politics out of it completely
right.
and put on the investigator's mindset, as we have always said. Don't look at it from a partisan. Look at it as an investigator. I don't know that. I know that the there's a witch hunt from Democrats and Adam Schiff and everything else. I don't know, as an investigator, whether Mueller's investigation is a witch hunt yet, because I haven't seen the report and I really don't know. Now, I'm being told by Trump and his attorneys that it is. The fact, my hint that it might be, is that he's going after, that I'm being told he's going after, an obstruction of justice charge, and it would be wanting to know, you know, what the president said to the FBI director and everything else, which can't be obstruction of justice. So I would look at that as an investigator, and I would tend to say, I'd say, well, wait a minute, why are you even looking at that when that's not obstruction of justice?
Yeah.
But I'm being told more of that by, I haven't heard the explanation of why Mueller is doing it. I've heard the explanation from the Trump lawyers and from Trump as to why he's doing it. But as an investigator, that would be my one thing. Why are you even looking at that? That doesn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
as an investigator, I would look at this and say, as we've said all along, I get charged with the edict of looking to see whether there was collusion with the Russians and the Trump campaign and any other crimes that may come from my investigation of that. Well, the first thing that I would look at, if I'm Robert Mueller, would be, all right, where is the best information? What got us to this point of believing that Trump might have colluded with the Russians? Well, the FBI was investigating him for collusion, and that's where this all came from. All right, I want to see everything the FBI has, and I want to see the FISA warrant. Well, that takes you in two directions. First off, you would get to that point, and then you would backtrack through the FISA warrant. Where'd this information come from? It came from the Russians. Well, who did the Russians, it came from Christopher Steele. Well, where'd Christopher Steele get his information from? All right, let's interview him. He got it from the Russians. Well, wait a minute. Why was Christopher Steele even looking at this? Oh, because he was paid by Fusion GPS. Well, who's Fusion GPS? Well, they're this research organization that was hired by Perkins Coie. Well, who's Perkins Coie? Oh, they were paid for money by the DNC and the Hillary investigation. So that would bring you naturally to the collusion with the Democrats just by having the investigative mindset. The other road it would take you on is, okay, they got this FISA warrant and we're finding out, oh my God, this wasn't credible evidence whatsoever. Wait a minute, they unmasked these people? Who unmasked these people? And they would follow it all into the unmasking and into, as we call it, deep state and the intelligence agencies about whether any laws were broken there. That's how if I was an investigator, and I will say this, I've had no police investigative experience ever. I've never taken a law enforcement course. But if I was an investigator, from what I know, that would take me in both directions. So if Mueller did not include and did not get to the collusion with Hillary, as an investigator, I would not look at that as a valid report.
And here's why I say I agree with the president, and maybe for different reasons, a different premise, that it is a witch hunt, is the actual directive itself, the nature of the directive. We don't know what's in Mueller's mind. We don't know. I do know that I believe, and thank you, Chris, for the call, I believe that Mueller is trying to send political messages, certainly with the indictment of the 13 Russians. Not that he shouldn't go after those
right.
Russians, but he clearly was not prepared for them to show up with a lawyer. And they did, which tells me that was one of those empty messages that he was trying to send. And that's politically driven. That doesn't really apply to Trump just yet, because we don't know what's, again, in the mindset. And we'd have to parse through any report that Mueller does write.
Right.
I believe for a different reason, it's not. I can't assign it to the mindset of Mueller just yet. I can assign it to the nature of the investigation and the assignment of the special prosecutor to begin with.
Right. Now that I take my just investigator hat off and look at the political process that led to it, I agree with you, as we always have,
yeah,
with the fact that Mueller should never have been a special investigator, special counsel, special prosecutor, because you only put a special prosecutor when there's an actual crime.
Right.
What was the crime? What was the allegation of a crime? And so that is the political part of it that you can say this is why it's a political witch hunt, mm-hmm. and that's why Trump can justify that statement, because when you look at other special counsels,
yeah.
you can sit there and say, well, there was a specific crime. There was a specific allegation of a crime. There's never been a specific allegation to the crime after over a year of FBI investigation. And then after over another year of a special counsel, we still have no evidence. Forget about evidence. We still don't even have allegation of a specific crime. Forget about evidence to back up allegation of a specific crime. We still, to this point, don't even have an allegation, and yet you've got a 3-week protest going on in front of the White House.
And that's,
that he committed treason.
Exactly.
And they can't even tell you what the allegation of treason is.
And it just is mind-boggling that it carries on this far. So we'll see, and I do agree with the caller that it if you look at it, unless there is some kind of, and this is where we can fold in the recent comments by Rudy Giuliani, the whole, you know, trap that I believe would be the setup. If you're bringing the president in for questioning and on obstruction and all of that, if I'm the lawyer, I say, absolutely not. Not going to happen. And here's why. Is because it would be easy enough to set up this president based on comments or questions and how he might answer in front of Mueller, and then Mueller having a number of public comments that same president has had on Twitter and has made on Twitter and has made in interviews surrounding this whole thing. And if those comments counter each other, or as you mentioned yesterday, Gary, if another person associated with it says, oh, no, that's not the case, he definitely intended to do this by, you know, firing Mueller or whatever you want to, or firing Comey or whatever you want to say, whatever he's pursuing here on obstruction, then you could see that indictment coming down. And that is a setup. That is a lie. If you've got evidence, real evidence, then move forward on that evidence. First, you have to identify that crime. But going in and asking him what was his intention when he fired Comey is about as bogus as it gets.
And Rudy Giuliani last night, the real story here is not that this case is going to fizzle. It's going to blow up on them. The real question is what we've talked about before. There's a lot more to what they did that nobody knows about yet, a lot more to the obstruction of justice. Mm. He's not talking about obstruction of justice of his client, by
right,
the way.
Right, right.
To the collusion, he's not talking about the collusion of the Trump campaign.
No.
Trump is his client.
Right.
To the fake dossier. Wow. To try to bring Steele back in when he was completely discredited. And this is the whole Bruce Orr thing. We'll get to that coming up following the top of the hour. In fact, John Solomon of The Hill has been covering this a lot. Mm. And it's that, you know, he was back in that after he was discredited. That's the whole Bruce Orr story. I mean, even into January, even into 2017, the FBI was still using him and the Department of Justice was still using Christopher Steele even after they discredited him.
Yes.
And so you see, if you want to see collusion. And this is a really interesting point, and this is what I'm wondering if this is what Giuliani is talking about. You had Bruce Orr still, talking to and communicating with and apparently using Christopher Steele, who was getting his information directly from the Russians.
Right.
So you actually get to the point, was the Obama Department of Justice through Christopher Steele colluding with the Russians on the dossier information, trying to legitimize it in order to discredit Trump and his presidency after the presidency? That's the point that I believe. He didn't state it, but I believe that's the point that Rudy Giuliani is trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Justice was colluding with Christopher Steele, therefore the Russians, because that's where the information came from. All Christopher Steele had was the information he got from the Russians. The Department of Justice, even after they discredited him, you know, was it in October of that year? We're not going to use him anymore, whatever,
right.
Because he compromised himself, that they still continued to use him. They could only use him because of the information he got from the Russians. So I believe that the allegation will come out that the Obama's Department of Justice and Bruce Orr, and then does it touch McCabe and does it hit Strzok?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I'm just throwing all of this out because Bruce Orr was with the Department of Justice. But does it all come together that they were all colluding after the election with Christopher Steele, which means the Department of Justice and FBI possibly was colluding with the Russians in order to destroy the credibility of the incoming Trump administration? Is that where they're getting to? Wow.
Yeah. Well, then you get to the comments by Ms. Farkas and saying, you know, when she was saying, oh, no, we wanted to get this out to all of our friends on the Hill, you know, before he became president, to basically show them what was going on. Well, let's say she didn't know the depth of all of this, right? That she didn't know it was all bogus to begin with, but she was told, as somebody who would have been one of the operators in this entire mission to discredit Trump, that it was legitimate. She believed it was legitimate. It was legitimate information, and they were going to get it to their friends on the Hill so the incoming administration wouldn't be able to squash it.
Well, that's a great point. Did the Department of Justice and the FBI, did they put out the word to other people that this was legit?
Yeah,
And go and sell this and leak it as legit?
Because if you want your operators in a grand conspiracy to operate that way in your favor, you're going to have to lie to them.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Cronin, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Whew, I'm exhausted from that last segment.
Yeah. Well, you know, the movie that they would have to make here, if this gets to be, and we learn more facts on this, and it turns out to be a massive abuse of power on many levels, I don't know how long. That like I said before, it's going to have to be a series on Netflix that lasts 20 years to get through it all, to explain everything chronologically, essentially, to depict all of that chronologically as it happened. But I was telling you during the break, I mean, there are a number of things that we know that are fact. We know.
Like
how we got the
when
dossier.
Detectives have like an entire flow chart of,
right.
You know, what.
Here's what we do know now.
Do we have a big enough wall?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, man, can we borrow the Great Wall of China for a minute? Just a few minutes?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.